There was a lady one day who lived way out in the boondocks, just way far from normal civilization. And there was not electricity in that area. But finally, they were bringing electricity out to the area in this remote place where she lived so that she could be hooked up with power. And when they got the electricity, they hooked it up to her home, and now she had access to power. But the electric company noticed something, and that is that her readings weren't demonstrating that she was using her power. Now, her power had been hooked up, but there was no indication that the power that she had was being utilized. So they sent the representative out to this lady's house. They knocked on the door, and she came to the door, and they said, excuse us, ma'am, but we came to change on your electricity. Is your electricity working? Oh, she said, absolutely, my electricity is working. Thank you for hooking me up to the power. Well, our readings aren't showing that you're using this power, so explain to us how you use the power. Oh, she said, it's simple. I turn on the lights long enough to light my kerosene lamp. And then I turn the electricity off. See, here was a lady who didn't understand what she had and wasn't maximizing the use of the power that had been attached to her. Many Christians don't utilize what Jesus Christ has provided us when we got hooked up to him. So we use him to get to heaven, but then we turn the power off and go our own way on earth and don't maximize the power that Jesus Christ has provided us. It was in Rome that Paul was in prison and he wrote a number of his New Testament letters. And from a city in Rome, we're here in the ruins of a Roman city, the kind of city where Paul would have been imprisoned, where he wrote the book of Ephesians. Ephesians is my favorite book in the New Testament, and it's an awesome book to talk about the church and about how Christians ought to be functioning. He tells us in chapter 1, verse 3, that all spiritual blessings have been provided us. Everything God is ever going to do, he's already done. The problem is, it's located in heavenly places. Heavenly places is a euphemism for the spiritual realm. He says in chapter 1, verse 3, your blessings are in heavenly places. He says chapter 2, verse 6, you're seated with him in heavenly places. He says in chapter 3, verse 10, that God through the church works to the principalities in heavenly places. He says in chapter 6, verse 12, that the enemy, the devil, operates from heavenly places. So heavenly places is where all the action is. So then if you want to get something on earth, you've got to be in touch with heaven. If you want the power to work down here, you got to have a hookup up there in heavenly places. It was with this in mind that caused him to pray one of the great prayers for power that you will find in the Bible and in the writing of Paul when Paul was in Rome writing back to the church he had established in Ephesus. In fact, when he was in Ephesus in Acts chapter 19 and verse 21, he told the Ephesians, I've got to leave here because I got to get to Rome. It's critical that I get to Rome because he wanted to get the gospel to Rome. So he gets to Rome. He winds up being in prison. He writes back to the church that he started in Acts 19, the Ephesians church, and he wants to make sure that they understand as we want to communicate in this simple prayer to you, the power that is available to you as a believer in Jesus Christ. These Ephesian Christians were going through various kinds of tribulation. They were worried about Paul in chapter 3, verse 13. And they said, I don't want you to lose heart at my tribulations. I don't want you to give up just because the going has gotten tough. I don't want you to quit just because life has gotten rough. And he's writing from a rough situation. He's in a prison in Rome. But he says, I don't want you to throw in the towel just because these are hard times. You and I are living in days of hard times. Some of you have come here from circumstances of hard times. And there the temptation is to throw in the towel when the going gets tough. And it is that that causes him to pray the prayer beginning in verse 14. He says, for this reason, because I know times are rough, for this reason I bow my knee before the Father. I get in touch with heaven, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name. So if you know Jesus Christ, he's your daddy, and he's named you and claimed you. That's the true name it and claim it right there, that he's named you and claimed you. And then he says, this is my prayer. My prayer is that he, the Father, would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in the inner man. So he says, I'm praying for you in your trouble, in my trouble, that you will have power. He says, this power starts in the inner man. You see, a lot of folk want power out here when nothing's going on down there. God will only give you power that you can handle. So if your container can't handle the power, he's not going to waste the power on you. So he says your inner man has got to be strong enough because of your spiritual life to handle the power. He says, I'm going to pray that you're strengthened with power. I was in my garage some time ago, and my door wouldn't open. My garage door wouldn't open. I pushed the button. I pushed it hard, and I pushed it often, but my door would not go up. Something was wrong with the power because my garage door wouldn't go up. So I went over to the door, and I tried to lift it myself, but it was too heavy because it was too strong, and I didn't have enough power. So I went, and I got on the telephone, and I called the garage door repair man and said, I have a power problem in my home, and my garage door won't open. I got to get my car out. I got to get to a meeting. I said, come over and solve my problem. It was like a prayer to my garage door repair man. Like we do with God, come and fix my problem, okay? He said, well, do me a favor. Before I come over there, just do me a favor. He said, walk to the garage door. So I walked over to the garage door. He said, look down. I looked down. He said, look to the left, look to the right. You'll see two square canisters at the bottom. I said, I see them. He said, which way are they pointing? Well, I say, one is pointing straight out, and the other is pointing toward the other one. He says, you don't have a power problem. You have a connection problem. He said, the reason why your garage is not opening is that the connection is not where it needs to be. He said, those two canisters need to be facing each other so they can talk to one another. You see, when you pushed the button and called me, I couldn't come to your aid because the connection was not in sync. So if you'll simply turn the one that's pointing straight to point to the other one, I think the connection will introduce you to the power. I simply turned it, and then I pushed the button, and it was a miracle. The garage door opened. See, a lot of Christians are looking for more power when they need a better connection. Because if we strengthen the connection, you'll see that the power has already been connected. Where does this connection to power come from? He says in verse 17, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, and that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may comprehend with all the saints the breadth and the length and the height and the depth, and to know the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. He says, if you want more power from God, you got to have a deeper connection with Christ. Christ is the mediator between God and man. He is the delivery system of heavenly power during earthly trouble. He says to get Jesus to transfer the power of God to you, he says Christ must dwell in your hearts by faith. Now, he's already talking to Christians. He's already called them his brothers and saints. So he's not talking about getting saved. The Greek word for dwell means to make yourself at home. That's what dwell means, to make yourself at home. Now, most of us lie at our house because when we got a welcome mat out there, it says you are welcome. Then when a person comes to the front door, what do we say? We say, make yourself at home. That's a lie. What we really mean is, make yourself at room. The rooms I tell you, you can go to. You can go to the den, maybe to the living room, maybe in the kitchen. You can go to the bathroom, but you can't go all up in my bedroom. You can't go all up in my attic. You can't go all up in my garden. In other words, I'm going to give you this sphere that you can roam in. So when I say make yourself at home, that's just a figure of speech. I really am going to confine you. What most people have done with Jesus is said, make yourself at room. You can have this part of my life, and that part of my life, but you got to leave the living room of my relationships alone. You got to leave the garage of my toys alone. You got to leave the attics of my hidden things alone. And you just stay in my religious life, my church life, my devotional life. But if Jesus Christ can't roam the premises of your mind and of your heart and of your life and of your soul, then God is not free to deliver his power because he doesn't want to deliver his power to a messy situation. You know how we do when guests are coming over and we're not ready and we throw stuff in the closet. We try to hide it. The only problem with Jesus is he saw you when you were throwing it in the closet. And he wants to make himself at home. But why? So that there is no blockage in the dissemination of the power. So he says, let Jesus Christ roam in you. Here is the principle. God will only give you as much of his power that he knows you can handle. Because he's not about to waste his electricity from heaven. We just came from the Sea of Galilee. If you take a thimble and dip it in the Sea of Galilee, you're going to get a thimble worth of Galilee. But that's all you're going to get. Because once that thimble is full, anything else given is wasted. Because that's all a thimble can handle. If you bring a glass to the Sea of Galilee, that's going to give you more than a thimble, but it won't give you more than a glass. Because once that glass is full, anything else is wasted. If you bring a bucket to the Sea of Galilee and you fill the bucket, you're going to get more than a thimble. You're going to get more than a glass, but you're not going to get more than a bucket. Because once that bucket is filled, then anything else is wasted. If you bring a barrel to the Sea of Galilee, you're going to get more than a thimble, more than a glass, more than a bucket, but you're not going to get more than a barrel. Because once that barrel is full, anything else is wasted. If you bring a tanker to the Sea of Galilee, you're going to get more than a thimble, more than a glass. You're going to get more than a bucket, more than a barrel, but you're not going to get more than a tanker. It's not because the Sea of Galilee can't give you more. Is that what you brought can't handle more. And so that's why some Christians only have a thimble worth of Jesus' power. Other Christians have a glass worth of Jesus' power. Other Christians have a bucket worth of Jesus' power. Other Christians have a barrel worth of Jesus' power. Then other people have a tanker worth, but there's so much more to give. Dependent upon your capacity. So spiritual intimacy with Christ roaming all of your life, no division between secular and sacred, that expands your capacity. And when it expands your capacity, that gives you access to more power, which leads to the most famous verse in this chapter, in this book, and in one of the most famous verses in the Bible. He says in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, "Now unto him who is able to do far more, abundantly beyond all that we can ask or think, but watch this, according to the power that works in you." A lot of folk quote the first half who leave out the second half. "Now unto him who's able," so there is no ability problem. Then he rolls the superlatives. "Now unto him who's able to do," because he not just talk. "Now unto him who's able to do exceedingly," he will blow your mind, "beyond what you can ask and what you've even not thought to ask for yet, beyond what you think." See, until you've seen God blow your mind, until you've seen him do stuff you didn't ask for, because you asked for this much, but he sees you can handle that much, so he gives you stuff you didn't even request it, because the power of Jesus and that connection is so strong that you get to ride off of the relationship. Of course, Anthony is my third child. He's my oldest son. And when he first started his singing career, he asked me to pick him up from the airport. So this was before 9/11, and so you could go right up to the gate. So I waited for him to pick him up. He's just getting started. And so he's the third person off the plane, and we're walking to baggage claim. Halfway to baggage claim, I stop. I look at him, and I said, "Oh, no, you didn't." And he started laughing because he knew exactly what I meant. You see, if you're the third person off the plane, you're in first class. If you're the third person off the plane, you're in first class. But he didn't have a first class ticket. He didn't have first class money. But he did have my name. Because he's a junior. So I knew what he had done. He had gone up there and said, "My name is Tony Evans. I'm a platinum flyer with American. Can you bump me up?" She said, "Oh, Dr. Evans, we're glad to have you flying with us again today." I knew what he had done. You know what he did? He piggybacked off of our relationship. He piggybacked. See, we got Christians who don't want to name the name of Jesus, but they want the power of Jesus. And Jesus says, if you don't name the name, you don't get the flow. Trust me, it's not just asking God. He says you ask God, but Jesus got to dwell. If Jesus is not the hookup, you don't get the Father if you bypass the Son, either to get to heaven or to get heaven to join you on earth. I remember another airline situation. Okay, so I go up to the desk, and I go up to see if they can bump me up, if there are any seats. And she said, "Oh, I am so sorry. There was only one seat left to bump up, and there was a person in front of you. So that one seat is now taken." So I started to walk away. I said, "Oh, excuse me, the person who just got that seat, what was their status?" She said, "Oh, they were Advantage Gold." So I pulled out my platinum card. I said, "Excuse me." I handed it to her. She said, oh, "I'm sorry, I didn't catch that." Yeah, you will get the seat because you have a higher relationship. Because to stay platinum, you got to fly 50,000 miles a year. So I gave her my platinum card, and then he got bumped. And I got to tell you the truth, I wasn't feeling all that bad about it. I know that's not Christian, but I wasn't feeling all that bad about it. So I'm feeling pretty good about my power right now. I'm smelling myself. But a man comes up behind me. He's got an executive platinum card. To be executive platinum, you got to fly 100,000 miles a year. So he had a higher relationship than me. So I got bumped because somebody else was closer to American than I was. However, not to be outdone, the head of special services for American Airlines was a member of my church. I picked up the telephone. I called back to Dallas, and I said, I got a problem here. I got bumped. I didn't say that I bumped somebody else. I said I got bumped because of an executive airline. She said, what gate are you at? I told her the gate. She said, go back to the gate. She called the gate. Special services handles dignitaries. So if a dignitary, a senator shows up or some big name person, they can bump you through special services because of who they are. And so she called the gate and said, there is a special person at the gate right now, Tony Evans, who I want you to put in that seat that you have, because the headquarters called and they knew my name. See, in this area in Bethlehem, Jesus got rid of some demons. Okay, he got it to rid. The demons knew who Jesus was. It's in Mark chapter 5. The demons knew who Jesus was. They were in control of the man till Jesus showed up. But when Jesus showed up and asked him his name, and the demon shouted out, Jesus said, come on out, because I'm running this territory. I'm in here. I'm going to show you some power. You thought you had power. You got power for pigs, because you need to leave out here. So when Jesus shows up, he transfers power because he can make connections. I don't care how powerful the people are with executive platinums over your life. It could be your boss. It could be your family member. It could be your circumstances. But if you dial special services and you got a hookup because you know who's there, Jesus can tell the Father, you can let that one go. Because Jesus says, if you deny me before men, I'll turn you down before my Father. But if you acknowledge me before men, I will acknowledge you before my Father. So some of us pray to God, and God turns to Jesus, and Jesus says, what you think, son? The son says, well, you know, they only go to church. They're afraid for people to see them pray in public. They never witness to anybody. They never give me glory, but they'll shout on Sunday morning. So, Father, I don't think you should dispense your power to them, because all they're going to do is use it up for themselves and then forget me all the more. So let's not hand that over to them. But to those who are connected with Jesus and therefore get access to power, you begin to see God blow your mind. In closing, some years ago, we went over to Niagara Falls, went to Niagara Falls on a family vacation. We got to Niagara Falls late at night. And if you've been to Niagara Falls, you know that there is a Canadian side and an American side to Niagara Falls. Our hotel was on the Canadian side. So we went into the hotel late at night. And when we got inside the hotel, I opened the window. And from the window, I could see the lights shining on Niagara Falls from a long way away. I couldn't hear it because I was too far. I was in the hotel, but it was impressive to look at. And so I looked at Niagara Falls from a distance on that night we got there. The next morning, we got up. And when we got up, we went, ate breakfast. And then on the Canadian side of Niagara Falls is a park. So we stood in the park. When we stood in the park, you could hear the roar of the water coming over the falls and hitting the basin below. It hit the basin so hard that the wind would blow drops of water that would dat you a little bit across the street into the park because there was so much power flowing over, and it hit so hard that the water would rise up and even cross you, and you would get affected a little bit by the falls. In the hotel room, I admired it, but I wasn't affected by it. When I hit the park, I admired it, and I was affected by it. But at the basin of the fall is the Maid of the Mist. The Maid of the Mist are little boats that take you on the basin of the fall. When you get in the Maid of the Mist, they give you a raincoat and they give you an umbrella because now you're getting ready to be drenched. You see, when I was in the hotel room, I could see it, but I wasn't affected by it. When I was in the park, I was closer to it and was affected a little bit by it. But in the Maid of the Mist, I got drenched because I was right up next to it. Some Christians serve Jesus from their hotel room. They know he's out there. They're impressed by him, but they're not affected by him. Others relate to Jesus from the park. Every now and then, they get a little something-something from him, and every now and then, they have a special reason to praise him. But for those who are not satisfied with the hotel room and those who are not satisfied with the park, I invite you to the basin. Now, let me warn you, if you're really going to get close, get your raincoat and get your umbrella, because now you're getting ready to get drenched by the power of Jesus Christ. God bless you in Paul's letter from Rome.